This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I recently found out that you can see a personal dietitian covered by insurance. There's this platform called Nourish that will match you with a dietitian based on whatever your concerns are, whether that's weight loss, eating disorders, autoimmune conditions, or something else. They're actually a network with major insurance providers, so most patients pay $0 out of pocket. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme. From serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I have a very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are now, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here, recording from the home studio. The 49ers Plus Minus podcast. I almost called this a TK show, Barros. You would have been a little mad at me if I'd done that. This is not the TK show. This is 49ers Plus Minus with my co-host, Matt Barros. Barros, we are recording this on, I can't even remember what day it is. It's Thursday morning, I guess it is.
Yes.
A few days after the Super Bowl. Many days after the Deebo Samuel trade request has been reported. Anything you can add to this or anything you want to probe on what's going on with the 49ers and Deebo Samuel?
Well, I'm having a hard time imagining how a trade would go. What are they going to get offered? And B, if teams suspect that he's ultimately going to be released – with a June 1 designation, why would they give the 49ers anything? Yeah. And remember, I mean, no team that wants Deebo Samuel is going to trade for him if he doesn't want to go to that team. So there could be a team out there that wants to get ahead of a second team to get him, but Deebo Samuel's agent is going to tell that team, no, he doesn't want to play there, in which case, it's over. So, I think that releasing him and allowing him to kind of choose his next home is probably the way this is going to go.
Yeah. And also they trade him, they get the big acceleration on the cap. Now, I think they're accepting that could happen if they get a good pick. But if you release him now, call it a post June 1 designation, as the Jets are doing with Aaron Rodgers, apparently. You can still talk to teams. You just can't sign with them officially, but you can come to agreement.
Right.
And I think that is likeliest the way to go. I'll just say I had some suspicion. I'd been saying in the past that maybe they'll do the thing they did with Juszczyk and Armstead last year. Like, you take a pay cut or we're going to cut you. And where Armstead said, fine, cut me, and got a deal with Jacksonville. And Juszczyk said, no, okay, I'll take the pay cut to stay. I thought all this might be part of that. Like, this might be this, okay, go find your trade value out there. You think you're so valuable, and maybe you come back to us. I checked. It is not that. I have heard that the two sides are separating in their minds. Now, things can change. Who knows? If he has no opportunities out there, that might be different. But I don't think he has no opportunities if the 49ers release him. He might even get a nice new deal. But as a released player, not as a traded player, more likely. And that the two sides are, I don't want to say irreconcilable, but it's likely that the two sides have decided that they're separate. This is two separate things. You know, I believe it's a valuing. The 49ers had a value for Deebo. He had a bad year. He is not in shape. I said it on last week's podcast, 20 pounds. I keep hearing it over 20 pounds overweight, 20 pounds overweight. And that led to a lot of his lack of explosion in their belief, his lack of ability to get through tackles. That's kind of been who he is. That's why he's so valuable. It's not because he's outrunning people. And the sense that Debo said, okay, you don't think I'm that valuable, then let me get out of here. I think that this has come to an end. This relationship, which was great for Kyle Shanahan and Debo, and I think they're still close, but I think had been bumpy. And I think, and I've said, kind of said it before, I think 49ers negotiators, management, upper management, are a little tired, more than a little tired of going through this with the receivers. The Ayuk thing even might have bled into this one. They're just sick and tired of dealing with receivers who they don't think operate at their level negotiating wise. They play hard. These are definitions of the 49er mentality, but I've heard that the Debo thing for sure on both sides, where they both think that there needs to be separation. Just like it's not like a play it out thing. This is like both sides are pretty well convinced that this is over. Now, Barros, if it's completely gone, if Debo Samuel's not, I do think they need another receiver, right? They can't just draft a receiver and go, okay, there's our third receiver. You got Ayuk, you don't know when he's going to be coming back. You've got Juwan Jennings, who's been a three. So, you know, I think we all saw that he played like a 1A, 1B, maybe two, but you don't know that. And you've got Ricky Pearsall, who you're not sure about. You got Jacob Cowan, you sure aren't sure of. Do you think they need to add a pretty good veteran receiver?
Yeah, and I think that there will be veterans out there. I think that they feel like once Ayuk is back in full swing, our top three is set. You've got Ayuk at his usual X spot. You've got Juwan Jennings in the spot that Debo would have played. And you've got Ricky Pearsall playing out of the slot or kind of filling in for both guys when it's time for them to take a breather. The question is Ayuk and when he'll be back in full form. And no one has come out and said that, what the timeline is. I talked about it or wrote about it in today's mailbag. If you go back to 2020 when Nick Bosa got hurt, tore his ACL, that occurred on September 20, and he was back for the start of the next season. He was back practicing in full by mid-August. So Brandon Ayuk was hurt on October 20, 1 month later than Nick Bosa was. So based on that timeline, you would think mid-September is when he's back practicing in full. Maybe by the end of September, he's playing again. So maybe he misses a month. So that's probably the working timeline right now. But yeah, I agree with you. And if you're looking for somebody who can fill in for a little while, I think that the 49ers are going to have some options. Remember, the Brandon Ayuk trade talk involved the Cleveland Browns, and it would have sent Ayuk to the Browns and Amari Cooper to the 49ers. And I think the 49ers would have been okay with that. You know, Amari Cooper would have come also with a pick as well. And the 49ers would have had a lot more cap space because of it. So, I mean, he's a possibility. I threw out two other names. Keenan Allen, who played at Cal, still productive, although, I mean, you're probably not going to get 17 games out of him. You're certainly not signing him to a five-year deal. And then Brandon Cooks, who's made a career out of like just kind of parachuting into one city after another and doing pretty well each time. He's from Stockton. I'm sure that he would love to kind of play semi-locally here. Those are just three names. There's a lot more of that sort of caliber player.
Yeah, I think the T. Higgins, which many fans have thrown out there, is going to be too expensive. Free agent is going to be a $28 million receiver, and that's going to be – it's hard for the Bengals to do it because they got their – you know, they got Ja'Marr Chase coming up. So it's hard to have two $28 to $30 million receivers, and the 49ers are getting out of a $22 million or whatever Debo's number counts as, in addition to a $30 million a year with Ayuk. You know, I thought about Davante Adams. He wants to come to the West Coast. I think the Chargers kind of have a higher end receiver, you know, maybe in target. So I would think that'd be the first choice, but maybe not for Davante Adams. A little old, going to be expensive. he's the kind, like, he reminds me of an Emmanuel Sanders, and I'll probably be pissed. He's pissed that he's that's a comparison, but like that final piece for a year, go get a Super Bowl. I could see that in Devontae. He's a little different than that. He's a higher class of receiver than Emmanuel Sanders, but I feel that, again, tough to see it. Like, he's going to want a new deal. Like, he always, Devontae Adams, that's who he is. He always wants a new deal. We'll see. There are probably other receivers out there. I think Cooper Kupp's probably not healthy enough, not, you know, dynamic enough to really make a difference. But, you know, kind of, that's a 49er style receiver, blocking, tough, you know, getting the slot. There's some interesting things. I don't think any of them will be a difference maker. Devontae Adams could be. Yeah, I think they do. I just think they need a receiver. I just do. They're going to need somebody else, because then what if Ayuk gets hurt again? You know, then you're down to take a pounding play. You know, these guys get hurt. Receivers get hurt. We've seen it. It's part of the deal with Debo is that he's been hurt, and that hasn't been the most productive player in the history of the world. Let's leave that into that. We are just, you know, feels like a while ago, but the Super Bowl was not that long ago. Do you think there are lessons there? There are things the 49ers watched in this, let's say the end run of the playoffs, including the Super Bowl, that are lessons for them or things they can take away from this?
I think it just reinforces their theories on defense. You know, that was the thing that when the 49ers were looking to pair a GM up with Kyle Shanahan back in the winter of 2017, that was the thing that really connected John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. Everybody thinks that these guys had a pre-standing relationship, that they knew each other, that they worked with each other or something like that. They really hadn't. They chatted a couple of times via John Lynch's broadcasting thing, where the guy gets to, the broadcaster comes in and meets with the coaches and things like that. But they really didn't have any sort of pre-existing relationship at that point. But they hit it off because they agreed that the two most important positions were quarterback and defensive line. And this idea of kind of hitting home with just four rushers and not blitzing a lot, which is what Vic Fangio did in the Super Bowl, is really something that the 49ers believe in. They cannot do that with the current cast that they have at defensive line. That's clear. Nick Bosa and Sam Oh for big stretches of the second half of the season. You know, that's something that they have to absolutely work on, and probably defensive end is more important to get right than defensive tackle, although both are lacking at this point. And it'll be interesting to see how the 49ers tackle that issue. I mean, I expect once free agency is done, it's going to be clear to us what they want to do in the draft, because they have to take care of something in free agency so that they can concentrate on bulking up another part of the line during the draft. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was Vic Fangio's real, you know, we've thought a lot about Fangio over the years. This was the first time I think that the world really kind of appreciated what he's able to do. What were your thoughts of watching that blowout?
Exactly the same. You know me and Fangio. Like, I just, like, that guy's a guy. He's like, you put him in charge of a defense, things are going to be run at the top level, which makes me think about the Miami Dolphins, who had him for a year and complained about him. Like, that is not a serious operation. I know Mike McDaniel is a really bright guy. If Vic Fangio's there for a year and you didn't want him there anymore, that's your fault, because he's just the ultimate high level defensive coordinator, now has a Super Bowl and did not blitz a single time in the Super Bowl against Patrick Mahomes. Like, that is remarkable, and got that kind of pressure because the investment's there, right? That's a team that thinks like the 49ers, invest on the line of scrimmage, invest in defensive line, all those first round picks, free agents. Some didn't work, like, you know, the Huff coming over from the Jets, that didn't work, but they still invest. They keep guys there. They have the guys who can put pressure on a quarterback, and it just changes the game. Might have changed the game for the 49ers twice in the Super Bowl against Patrick Mahomes. They got a little more pressure. They got some in 19. Not so much in the previous Super Bowl, but yeah, just invest in the defensive line. But I do think the Debo thing makes me think, like, okay, if you can get a defensive end in free agency and trade market, maybe you can lean for pass catcher in the first round. I don't think that's what they're going to do, but Tyler Warren is just sitting there for them. That intrigues me, although I have heard over and over again that this defense, they're going to be focused on defense. Saleh all this investment. They think they've invested plenty in the offense. Kyle's had his, got his weapons. They got to get healthy. They need to restock the defense. That's just what I keep hearing. And Saleh is part of it. They're paying him a ton of money. This, you know how Jed York thinks. Like, he's investing all his money in the coaching staff. Let's take advantage of that with what the personnel is. I don't know who they can get as a free agent. It just seems so likely that they'll draft a defensive lineman. But if they can invest some money in the defensive line with somebody they really think pops, I know Myles Garrett is the person, obviously, in the trade market, everyone would think. We'll see, but they'd probably have to give up 11 to get Myles Garrett. So I'm not saying they could get Myles Garrett and Tyler Warren, but I think you see what I'm saying. They got to get a couple of defensive linemen. If they can do it in a way that does not involve their first round pick, then maybe they can use the first round pick for offense, Tyler Warren, whoever. But otherwise, I think they look at the Super Bowl. Yeah, defensive line. We know they've drafted defensive line throughout this time. John Lynch loves defensive linemen. Nick Bosa is probably his favorite player on the team. And I cannot, they're looking at it going, yes. And I said that on Twitter. Fans said, no, offensive line. I go, no, they don't really think the offensive line like that. The Eagles do. Like, you've invested in offensive line. You know, Jordan Mailata was not a top pick, and he's an incredible player. Great find. But the 49ers kind of think, yeah, we can get through that, and we can figure out ways on the offensive line. You need a one stud, Trent Williams. You don't need stud. And I just don't think that's going to change by what they saw, although you could say that, hey, the Chiefs had invested more heavily in the offensive line, they wouldn't have had Mahomes, you know, completely ground up like that. But that's not how the 49ers think. They think the talent shows on the defensive line. The coaching shows on the offensive line. And I don't think that's going to change. Although, in your mock draft, Matt Barrows, which I'm sure is being studied carefully in 49ers headquarters, you have the 49ers taking an offensive lineman, a tackle. How did you think that through? Have you already heard complaints from Kyle Shanahan that you would do that?
I've heard complaints from the rabble, for sure, from Twitter. Well, mainly because the guy that I picked at number 11 is coming off a major knee injury.
Like Kelvin Banks, Texas, right? Kelvin Banks, that you had him taking?
No, I had the Georgia, Josh Williams, because I thought that he's the most talented guy. The offensive tackle class is a bit of Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Everybody has every candidate has a flaw, and Williams' flaw. I mean, sorry, it's Josh Simmons. Flaw is that he's coming off this injury, but if he's able to get past that injury, he's the best tackle in this class, and I think he's the best for the 49ers because he's big. He moves really well. I think he'd be able to kind of master the zone blocking. He'd be able to do some of the things. I'm not going to say he's Trent Williams. He'd be able to do some of the things that Trent Williams does. He's very light on his feet, able to move around. So, my rationale for that is that this is a team that doesn't think that it's going to be picking in this spot or anywhere close to this spot in the near future. So whenever you get a chance to be, that high in the draft, you should take a big ticket item like an offensive tackle. That's what they did in 2018 with Mike McGlinchey. They had the number 9 pick. Did it work out? Probably not. They let McGlinchey go after 5 seasons. But you don't get very many chances to get a bookend offensive tackle, and this might be a chance for them to do that. The other guy who might be, somebody that they look at number 11 is Will Campbell from LSU. And he's kind of a tried and true tackle. He's been starting at LSU for, I think, 4 seasons. He's got a lot of snaps under his belt. He's a very McGlinchey-like pick. You know what you're getting. He's a high floor, low ceiling pick. So that may be what they end up doing if they go offensive tackle. But like McGlinchey, I think that he's got some flaws.
No,
he's not a high end tackle. He's a good meat and potatoes tackle. But if you're looking for someone who can be a star, who can make a Pro Bowl, I think Josh Simmons would be the pick. So that's why I picked that guy there. You know, if Mykel Williams, he's a pass rusher, an edge rusher from Georgia, is there at number 11, and I'm not sure he would be. That might be the pick, because then you would have somebody who could be a bookend for Nick Bosa for the next 5, next five seasons, and that would kind of play into what we're talking about with the Philadelphia Eagles. Although I gotta say, the Eagles, the two guys who made the biggest difference for the Eagles, Josh Sweat and Jalix Hunt. Sweat was a fourth round pick.
Yep.
And Hunt was almost a fourth round pick. I think he was like a comp pick or a late third round pick a couple of years ago. So it does show that you can find these guys. They may not be stars right away, but you can find them on day two and even day three.
And the 49ers have proven that they can draft defensive linemen high. They can be devoted to this and miss on them. You know, Javon Kinlaw, you know, we've seen Drake Jackson, second round pick. You're not guaranteed. The investment is no guarantee. It is just an investment. And even, again, so the Eagles have missed on some, but you just keep doing it, and then you hit with some monsters, and then you're set up pretty well. Yeah, I don't think the way you said that, I understand the thought process. I don't think Kyle Shanahan is going to be too intrigued by those tackles. I just don't feel that. I think he's going to want to go for an impact defensive lineman over that. You say somebody who's injured in college is going to go, I'm going to see him in minicamp. He's going to be standing on the side. To hell with him. Like, that's how they think. He's not going to play for me. Why the hell do I want him, especially on offensive line? Unless they see someone to go, okay, that guy in training camp, he's going to be the guy. Mike McClinchy going to be the guy in their minds. So we shall see on that one.
Wait a second. Is Tim Kawakami the guy who's been busting the
49ers? Oh, no, I think they should.
Not taking a tackle. Yeah. All these drafts are saying, no way.
We got the different lines here. It's between what I think they should do and what I think they're going to do.
Okay.
Those are two very different things. I'm saying I could be persuaded by a lot of those arguments on those tackles. And just by and it's easy for me to say, it's not my job on the line, I don't think, to say, you know what, the guy's okay, at least you took a shot. That is not how they think. They do not think like that. Kyle Shanahan absolutely does not think about like that in a first-round pick for an offensive lineman. He needs to think, this guy's going to be really good. Like, that's it. Penny Sewell, you know, whoever. Like, that's the level that they think this 11 pick, I'm sure, must fall. They do not think that about defensive line. They just want talent, 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 talent. So I would take a tackle, although I'm not sure who it would be. I would take a tackle. I don't think they're going to. It just doesn't sound like they're going to. Now, well, again, you had made a great point. Let's see what they do in free agency. We'll really open up what they might, you know, where the vacancy is in the draft. But just doesn't feel like offensive line to me is the right thing. Unless they move up and go get somebody they love at six. Like, they think the guy's going to be gone at six. I don't know who that would be. Isn't Campbell thought to be the top tackle in the draft?
He is, but some people see him as a guard. You know, I watched the LSU versus Texas A&M, and Texas A&M had a very good defensive line, a lot of like big kind of bull rush guys. And Campbell doesn't do very well against the bull rush. So he doesn't have quite the size, the girth that you would want at offensive tackle. So, I mean, again, if the 49ers think that the guy is a tweener, I just don't see them taking that person at pick number 11.
No.
So that's why I went with Simmons, because he's an obvious tackle. He looked really good before he got injured. Then he got injured. So, that would be the risk that you're taking. And it's a big risk. But if you're right on it, then you not only have a right tackle for the 2025 season, and possibly you could even move Colton McKivitz in at guard. I mean,
that's my plan all along.
That's the position they thought originally that he would play. And I think he'd be a great guard, a super guard. So you would have an offensive line of Trent Williams, Colton McKivitz, Jake Brendel, and we can talk about center in a minute, Dominic Pooney, and then Josh Simmons. And then when Trent Williams is ready to move on, who knows when, Simmons becomes your left tackle.
Yep.
Seems very prudent to me. You might not get a chance at a top-tier offensive tackle, I mean, if everything goes according to plan, for a while. So why not take advantage of this rare opportunity?
That is the TK plan and has been for 2 years now. They don't seem to operate that way, though. Like, I keep going, like, I can only pound my head against the wall so many times when they just refuse to do it. Unless Shanahan and Lynch have some left tackle like they had Trent Williams in their pocket ready to play back in 2020. And I have a sneaking suspicion they think they do, but I don't know who that is. There was a tackle who came up. I saw, like, there's a, I forget who it was, like, there's a tackle who might be available. I went, whoa, like 32 years old. That's a guy that they could jump in for. I forgot. I shouldn't have bring it up without remembering who his name was. But, like, maybe they've got somebody who's playing their system, but it takes a lot. That was an incredible move with a Staley retirement, go right to Trent Williams. So you don't give up a first round pick. My God. But I do think investment is not a terrible thing. I just don't think they're going to do it. All right, Barros, Josh Dubow from the AP saw Jed York in New Orleans at the Super Bowl. I'm not quite sure where, but he did get a quote from him about Brock Purdy saying that he's, you know, they've already talked or he's talked with the agent already. They value him. Obviously, it backs up everything that we've heard. They don't expect this to be a dramatic thing. Now, you never know. I don't think they expected the Ayuk thing to be dramatic, and it was the most dramatic thing they've had in years negotiation-wise. What did you make of the Jed York quote? What do you make of the timing of it? And are you expecting, have you heard, have they had talks? Is this kind of in progress?
Yeah, I mean, the combine is usually when these things start to heat up. I remember, I forget what year Colin Kaepernick signed his big extension, but it started with a meeting, a dinner between Prague Marate and Colin Kaepernick's agents in Indianapolis, maybe even at St. Elmo's or Prime 47, one of the state places. So if you see Lynch or Prague Marate meeting with Brock Purdy's agent in Indy in a couple of weeks, we'll know that things are starting to percolate. So that's when I expect things to start to heat up.
Late February, early March.
Yeah, late February. This is usually when it happens. This is how sort of free agency begins, really. So all these people are in Indianapolis to talk about the draft, because all of these agents are representing all of these college players who are coming in for the scouting combine. Well, during those meetings, they're actually talking about their upcoming free agents. So this is where free agency and contracts and all of that stuff really start to happen. So the combine begins, I think, on the 25th of February. So I expect things to, you know, and not just with Brock Purdy. I mean, with Dre Greenlaw and his agent and Talanoa Hufanga and his agent, I think we're really going to start to figure out the lay of the land coming out of the combine. And, you know, when it comes to Brock Purdy is not a free agent to be, but those other guys are. And I think as the closer you get to the combine, if something's not done with a free agent, that free agent is probably going to get to free agency. They've gotten this far. Why don't they just go another 2 weeks and see what the market is at that point? So if there's nothing done with Greenlaw, if there's nothing done with Hufanga, I think, you know, the agents will want to see what they can get in free agency. And the 49ers at that point would then cross their fingers that their markets are less than what the player and agent hope that they'll be, and that they can be re-signed to a more moderate deal.
Yeah, my guess is Greenlaw is going to get a nice market. That's my guess. I was wondering about that because, again, he only played for a half plus. This is a tough injury. Explosion is so important, but he was so explosive. He's such a good guy. There are coaches around the league who have coached him and know how valuable he is. The 49ers aren't going to get him cheap. Like, they might get him on a short-term deal, but it's not going to be cheap. Hufanga, I don't know about, but I'll just say on the Jed York quote, just for him to give the quote, I think is indicative of him feeling pretty good about it. We've known Jed over these years, and if it's getting a little tricky, he usually doesn't say anything, which is fine. His right for him to just say, yeah, you know, I feel whatever he said. I'm going to paraphrase it, but it certainly was an indication of feeling good about it. I think the sense is that they don't think the Purdy group is going to come in super high. Maybe they will. It's negotiations, but this thing is not going to be a $60 million contract. I feel very confident in saying that. The Players Union always wants the next quarterback to reset the market. I do not think that's happening. There was the Dak Prescott thing hit 60 for a whole lot of reasons. One of them is they couldn't franchise tag him. Like, that was out of the picture. So there were so many different kind of levers that had to be pulled for that one. Again, that doesn't mean this is going to happen right away, but everything I've heard is that both sides feel like this is going to be a level-headed situation, and it can get done relatively quickly, whether that's mid-March, late March, early April, May, I don't know, but I think everybody's feeling pretty good about this one, and it might blow up on all their faces, but I do think everyone's feeling pretty good about that, just like everyone's feeling good about Muddy the Water, the new best-selling novel, co-authored by Matt Barrows, doing spectacularly. I am reading it. I'm reading it back and forth. I took it on the road with me because I got a paperback. I got cheaped out. I bought a hardcover and got a paperback. But it actually was good for me on the road because I could stick it in my bag. And I was reading it loyally. It's very good. It's engrossing.
Where are you in the book? What's happening?
I am in the guy's just starting at the newspaper. So he's gotten through the newspaper. I like that little, again, I don't want to give away a plot, but I like the layers of the newspaper stuff. It's almost like somebody has worked at a newspaper before to give you, and a small newspaper, which I was an intern in Jacksonville. So I felt that, like coming to a new place, you've got these really sharp editors, you've got these other editors who maybe are a little different, and you're just kind of wading through it. That's where I am right now. And it's very well done.
Write what you know, and I know.
Yeah, but you're murdering people, Barrows? How many murders have you committed along?
Well, how many have I been convicted of? Zero.
I did think that Barrows' whole story. Oh yeah, I thought of this when I was driving down, and I realized somebody could murder me, and no one would know, and they could claim it wouldn't be. I go, wait a minute, like you got, you're not dead, so you might have been the one who did this. I'm not sure.
No, I'm very much the victim in this one.
you're out. You wrote yourself out in after like 40 pages, by the way.
Exactly.
All right, enough Buddy the Water talk, but I had to give it one more plug.
Well, your Jacksonville comment, and first of all, I didn't know that you interned in Jacksonville, Florida.
Yes, I did, at the Florida Times Union and Jacksonville Journal. I absolutely did that. It was
It wasn't very far away from my newspaper in Hilton Head, South Carolina. It was about 90-minute drive to Jacksonville.
Yeah, it was the South. It was the South. And I'll always say, I'm a West Coast kid. I was going to Northwestern, so very much not the South. And you get there, and you're like, I knew it was a different world where we had this, you know, the other intern and I had an apartment, and it was so hot, there was a bullfrog just sitting in front of our door, because that's what frogs do when it's that hot and humid. They just sit there. And you had to like walk around the bullfrog to get into the house because it just was sitting there. And there was a gator in the pond in our complex.
Oh yeah, every pond down there has a gator. If there's a pond, there's a resident gator.
Yeah, just like, this was a whole different world. And I'm glad I went to University of Florida football game, all that stuff. But it was wild to go through that. And then go through that. It's super hot, right? Da-da-da-da, fall quarter. And then go right into winter quarter Northwestern. You can imagine what that was like. It was wild. But I'm glad I went through it. I'm also glad that I'm not in Jacksonville right now.
Well, Jacksonville reminds me. I read something this morning that said that Ethan Wall was a top candidate to be the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Well, he's there now, right? He's there now.
He's the interim GM right now. So he's basically running. This is like when Dick Cheney was running the vice presidential search, and he comes up with Dick Cheney as the top candidate for George Bush. Ethan Wall is running the GM search in Jacksonville, and Ethan Wall could end up as the GM. But my point being that would mean that there are now two GMs, Ethan Wall and Adam Peters, who are on hand to basically bring in all the 49ers free agents who will be available. So Ethan Wall was certainly with the 49ers when they drafted Dre Greenlaw and with the 49ers when they drafted Talano Hufanga. So I think Hufanga. My point is, all of a sudden, there are even more people familiar with these guys and probably more willing to take a risk on a Greenlaw who's been injured.
Well, so we track Rand Carthon from that, though. Like he signed Aziz, right? Is that who's no? Aziz went to Houston. My bad.
Well, no, he signed Aziz in 23 to a 1-year deal, and then the next year he went to Houston.
Okay, that's why I was thinking that. So subtract Carthon, but you still have D'Amico, obviously in Houston. Although he fired Bobby Slowik, which was interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, I've heard Slowik, and then Slowik ended up somewhere else, I think. But I had heard. This is my standard end of podcast, throw it out there. I've heard that Slowik and Sala are relatively close. So, like someone was saying, watch out for Slowik if there's a Sala thing.
Now, I think Slowik got hired somewhere.
Yeah, he did get hired. But like if Sala becomes a head
coach. In Miami.
Yeah, I think the point was made to me. If Sala becomes a head coach again, that was kind of made to me. He's not hiring offensive staffers at the 49ers. I'm just like, it was pointed out to me like, just kind of as these chess pieces kind of materialize for now and into the near future, that's an interesting name, Bobby Slowik. But maybe I heard wrong. We'll see. A lot of interesting things get floated in this period, and they don't always come true. So, all right, Barros, we're trying to be as interesting as possible at the end of our podcast. So that just lures people to the end. What stupid stuff. Barros and Kawakami, what conspiracies and connections and mystifying things are they going to put together at the end of the 49ers plus minus? That's going to be our thing.
I've got a quick TV show for you, movie. There's a documentary about the making of Platoon.
Oh, really?
Which was surprisingly good. It was made by one of the sort of the bit actors, one of the guys in the Platoon. But it's sort of... Charlie Sheen's version of the making of Apocalypse Now, mm-hmm. which his dad, of course, was a star in. But both of those movies have good documentaries about the making.
Now one was unbelievable.
Yeah, and this one isn't quite as good as that, but it's still a lot more interesting than I knew.
What streamer are we talking about here?
Ah, geez, I might have bought. Purchased it for like $2.99 on Amazon Prime, but I'm not sure.
Okay, good. Glad to hear it. I will be watching that. The one I'm really looking forward to, Sly Lives, the documentary on Sly Stallone. You know me in music documentaries. I love them. I have not watched it, but I'm reading reviews of it, and I am going to watch this. There's no question about that. And interestingly, they did not interview Sly, who's still alive, but if you watch the Harlem Festival documentary a couple of years ago by the same producers, Questlove, he's not all the way there. You know, it's kind of sad to see. He's lucid for sure. He's there, but he can't put sentences together. That's what they kind of explain. Like, it's not the best kind of celebration presentation of Sly, and you have other people talking about him, about and his children. So it's just interesting. I was wondering about that because, man, it was a little awkward to get his comments. And he's done other documentaries. Again, he's Sly Stone. You're always kind of curious. And I thought, this is a few years later, it's probably not going to be great on a documentary about him. And they did not talk to him. So Sly Lives. I'll give a review.
Hey, if it's as good as Yacht Rock, I'm totally there.
That one was fantastic. That, I hate to say it, is some of these documentaries about music I don't like are the best. Because you don't know this stuff. Like, you know, there's just these developments like, whoa, Chris Cross and, you know, Kenny Loggins were friends. I didn't know that. You know, like those are things like that. Like, just geez, Michael McDonald's that cool. I didn't know that.
I had no idea what Chris Cross looked like. I mean, and he looks like he should be bagging your groceries at Trader Joe's.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. He's not exactly, as they made the point, he's not exactly your video star. He's not exactly the guy that you're thinking, oh my God, that guy's going to win the girl because he's so suave. All right. Enough of that. Barros. That's it for this week. We might be back next week. Maybe not. We'll see. There are always developments, though. We always end up doing something. All right, Barros. See you.
See you.